Wisconsin's high court reversed a 2022 decision by a then more conservative court, which said drop boxes were not allowed by the state constitution. The argument
taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, subversive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under Edict Number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, buddy.
Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXE ACRA 90.7 FM.
WGXE welcomes audio responses and feedback from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-622-2598 and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. That number again is 518-622-2598.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by the Country Shepherd, a construction consultation and client representation service for custom residential projects and maintenance. The Country Shepherd advises clients on every element of their renovation, ground up build or remodel, from hiring the right craftsman to managing timelines to locating the exact materials that their clients require. Founder Jeff Wilcox has been building custom residences since 1990 in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, and Italy. For more information, visit thecountryshepherd.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Melissa Oftemar and Tony Stone in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks. I am a master intercultural communicator who can be reached via my website, www.kimberlyirwin.me. Anytime, and here as your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, which is a wayfarm.org enterprise. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. People ask, why, Kim, are you talking about race? Why? My answer is simple. To combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. And now we're going to get talking straight up because this is a special edition of Race Talks. This is definitely where there is no topic that is taboo. This month of July, we had a really great holiday, the 4th of July, in which we celebrate the independence of the United States, or of the new country, from England. And we wanted to celebrate this on Race Talks by mentioning a phenomenal figure who was a former enslaved African American. And his name is Frederick Douglass. So his name is actually one that is actually taught in the American school system. And so I would hope that everyone who hears my voice at least has a little bit of knowledge about him. But what many people may not have had to do while they were studying him was to read many of his speeches and his stories. He has slave narratives on how he ventured out of slavery into freedom. So I'm not going to read all that, but I do have a snippet from his 4th of July speech that I would like to share in this segment. We also have as a guest speaker, special guest speaker, someone who's so special, he had to return. And his name is Wamara Moine. And he is a fabulous reporter who has much knowledge, firsthand knowledge about politics in the United States, specifically under one of my favorite presidents, if not the favorite, Barack Obama. So he is going to be our first and only guest. And we initiated that this time, because we have an opportunity for our guest listeners, that's you all, who are either driving or chilling, trying to stay cool in this very hot temperature weather. I think it's still in the 90s in some places, Garrett. And I mentioned Garrett because Garrett is not only the production assistant who helps and who would be helping usher in the conversations through the call-ins, but he is a podcaster himself, and he has a show, The Roche Solid Truth, where positivity at its purest is always performed. And so, Garrett, I just want you to quickly welcome the guests and share with them how to converse with us later in the show.
Good evening, Kimberly. The pleasure and honor is all mine, as always. The call-in number for all listeners out there who wish to share whatever is on their mind per this discussion this evening, this dynamic discussion, please call area code 518-622-2598. If you happen to be dialing internationally, by the way, you want to add a 001 before that number. So again, 518-622-2598. Please call and engage in this special, spectacular conversation, and let's make history from WGXC, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Thank you, Garrett. And
most welcome, Kimberly.
He will be saying that number one more time, maybe not the international version, but certainly for you to dial up if you're fairly local. I wanted to mention beforehand, before we get into this dynamic conversation and very real conversation, because it's actually one that we converse about because it's happening real time. And we don't normally do that. We usually plan these conversations months in advance. And so we don't have the opportunity to really talk about something that is happening as we pretty much speak. It's still ongoing. So, but before that, I wanted to mention that we do have another type of Race Talks. It's called Race Talks the Show, that will be streaming on major social media sites. And that will be by the end, well, it's August, I think. We have it scheduled for August, the end of August. So we will actually premiere a few snippets on this show next month's Race Talks in August. So I wanted to get that out for those of you who may have lots of things to do next third Tuesday, but you will need to definitely tune in or listen to the archives. Okay, so before we run out of time, I want to make sure that we have our guest who is going to be speaking, Wamara Muine, in on air. He's able to be on air. Can I get a thumbs up for that? Just to know that he's ready when I ask him his questions. Great. So I got a yes, yes. So without further ado, I am going to first introduce you to what I mentioned earlier in the segment about Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was asked after he came out of slavery, or I should say escaped out of slavery, to speak at a convention. He delivered an oration in Corinthian Hall in our fair state here in Rochester. And this speech, though I'm not sharing it all, I wanted to really set the stage for the conversations that we are going to expound upon in this hour. So this is from an 1852 speech that he gave. And I will be reading just a few parts that really share, again, his comfortability with the audience. So he knew exactly what to say to this predominantly not all white audience. And if there were any black people there, they were predominantly there to be there for their masters and engaged in that way. So he knew who his audience was in speaking. But I think you can hear why I'm saying this. It's because it's really talking to us today. Can you imagine hundreds of years later, we're still hearing these words? Mr. President, friends and fellow citizens, he who could address this audience without a quailing sensation has stronger nerves than I have. I do not remember ever to have appeared as a speaker before any assembly more shrinkingly, nor with greater distrust of my ability than I do this day. A feeling has crept over me, quite unfavorable to the exercise of my limited powers of speech. The task before me is one which requires much previous thought and study for its proper performance. I know that apologies of this sort are generally considered flat and unmeaning. I trust, however, that mine will not be so considered. Should I seem at ease, my appearance would much misrepresent me. The little experience I have had in addressing public meetings and country school houses avails me nothing on the present occasion. The papers and placards say that I am to deliver a 4th July oration. This certainly sounds large and out of the common way for me. It is true that I have often had the privilege to speak in this beautiful hall and to address many who now honor me with their presence. But neither their familiar faces nor the perfect gauge I think I have of Corinthian Hall seems to free me from embarrassment. The fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the distance between this platform and the slave plantation from which I escaped is considerable, and the difficulties to be overcome in getting from the latter to the former are by no means slight. That I am here today is to me a matter of astonishment as well as of gratitude. You will not, therefore, be surprised if in what I have to say I evince no elaborate preparation, nor grace my speech with any high-sounding exordium. With little experience and with less learning, I have been able to throw my thoughts hastily and imperfectly together, and trusting to your patient and generous indulgence, I will proceed to lay them before you. This, for the purpose of this celebration, is the 4th of July. It is the birthday of your national independence and of your political freedom. This, to you, is what the Passover was to the emancipated people of God. Then he moves on, basically, to say, what, to me, a former enslaved person, is your 4th of July? But he says it in a way that he could be heard as well as understood. He was a little bit self-deprecating, so that the ears could better hear his words. And that's what we are starting with today, because I am definitely going to share what I think and my opinions, and some of that will be truth, of course. And so will my guest. And so we're the listeners who call in. But it doesn't mean that we don't accept another person's judgment or values. Certainly, Frederick Douglass got up in front of an audience of perhaps most of people who would not want to hear from him. A former slave, what could a former enslaved person say to a president and to this, the larger statured people in that audience? But they heard him, and now we have, hundreds of years later, been able to hear him too. So with that, I want us to hear from our special guest, who now is two times a guest, a resident guest now, on The Race Talks with host Kimberly Y. Irwin. I'm going to share a few things about him because I don't know exactly what he's going to share, and I think it's important for you to know why I particularly wanted him to be a guest on this show. So major cathartic interest I have is of the election that's taking place. And Wamara, as I stated earlier, was ground zero, so to speak, in the reporting desks during Obama's administration. So he has met the players that we are seeing today in the political world with President Biden, and knowing him firsthand and his experiences that were familiar to him, being that he was around him. So he has a little bit of inside knowledge of just the conditions that Joe Biden is having right now and how he might be feeling, dealing with the family issues as well as now the political issues that we are all faced with, talking about his health and his wellness and whether or not he would be able to continue to be a nominated for the presidential campaign for the Democratic Party. But also so, too, he has written many an article on issues that, again, we're faced with in dealing with race and young people in the communities that we are facing, similarly to even those that happened during slavery, during Jim Crow. We said 100 years later, and it's still happening. And so what's missing? And part of what's missing is what we saw in Frederick Douglass's words, a way of being a little bit self-deprecating and not really, you know, pounding our chest, but allowing the other, another person to be of value to us, or to, I wouldn't say pretend, but to recognize that no one person can be all that to anyone or any struggle, and that we should all look to working together. So as a journalist myself, I welcome Wamara Mwinae. And Wamara, I know we have a few prepared things, but I want you to know this is going to be an organic conversation. So if we don't follow some of the materials that we have written to the T, that's going to be all right and acceptable, because that's how we roll here on Race Talks. So Wamara, please share why you feel that Race Talks is a great opportunity for you to share what your particular values and thoughts are when on the subject of politics, the media, and of course, race and ethnicity. Welcome.
Welcome. I would say the most important thing is that your broadcast is not addressed in the major media, you know, CNN, MSNBC. I mean, they try and talk about these issues, but they don't go as depth as you have. And I think that's refreshing. And I think right now, since the economy and everything else is in trouble, we need to know what's happening. We need to be able to discuss this stuff. And if we don't, it leaves people in the dark. And that creates a lot of anxiety and mistrust. I think that what you're doing is shedding light on issues that people actually care about and have not been addressed properly.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, and without guests such as yourself to come on and really share their true ideas and opinions, which are always taken as valuable here, because it is somewhat difficult to actually share exactly what you think about anything. People are so easily ready to tear someone down if their viewpoints aren't the same as someone else's. And of course, if everyone thought the same way, we wouldn't have done as much as we've done with ourselves and our communities and our lives and our technology. I mean, even Frederick Douglass spoke about the technology that we have today. He talked about airspace travel. And so these were things that people hundreds of years ago in 1800s were thinking about and recognizing that this could be a possibility. And again, on their shoulders we stand, and how dare we do anything differently. Here's a man, Frederick Douglass, who's talking to people who had virtually enslaved him. And he did so recognizing that these are the people that would also bring those other people, his other family members and enslaved people, to freedom. So, you know, we have to work together. We have to find a way, because we are one America, whether we like it or not. And if we try to break it into two, then we're not as strong. We're certainly not as powerful. And his recognition knew that. And his statements allowed us to recognize that. Well, Mara, I know that you had shared some information about Frederick Douglass yourself. Would you like to share that right now with the listeners?
Sure. Just a couple of thoughts. You know, America needs new leaders like Frederick Douglass. There's been a real lack of African-American leaders. And when one generation goes from out and another starts, then we have to have new leaders in the African-American community. If they're not there, then there's no guidance.
Now, when you say new leaders, I'm going to mention a few other things, though, because I wasn't specific about your bio, and you don't seem to want to share. You want people to remember from the last time you were on the show what your bio is, so I'm going to read a little bit. A seasoned contributor with the Hill newspaper, you bring over 20 years of professional writing experience specializing in crisis, communication, and diversity, which is why you're here on Race Talks. As an advisor to politicians, church leaders, and business figures, you are sharing your insights on various platforms, including this one, as well as a PBS-sponsored White House Chronicle, and several on Sirius XM Radio. Your discussions were spanning, like I mentioned, from the Obama White House to addressing issues like World Bank racism. So, I mean, I think you might have to be back on the show about that. And you have been a recognized correspondent, White House correspondent, and you are also a Fair Observer writer, and with your article documenting the alt-right following the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. And I mention that too because we're going to talk about Joe Biden, but we're also going to talk about former President Trump. So you have definite opinions on many of those political happenings. And so let's get started with sharing one of the statements that segments that I like to talk about first. So usually we'll have a ding. I don't know. Can we get a ding for a show of segment change? Thank you. Yeah, that's our technology at work. So we were thinking that in our community here, that's like we mentioned, Accra, Greene County, Columbia County, that we've had now several political figures that are people of color. Currently in Hudson, we have a black mayor. We just had a run for a particular seat in the assembly by an African-American young woman, Claire Cousin. She received many votes, so she was a positive influence on many people to run and to reflect who they are and what they wanted. And so we are seeing, since Frederick Douglass's time in the 1800s, that we have been able to rise out of that plantation feeling. And yet, like the question I mentioned in the intro, why are we still speaking about racism? So, Wamara, we have a first vice president in Kamala Harris, being both African American and of Asian descent. Is that not enough?
No, it's not enough. I feel like Kamala has some national presence, but I feel like there's got to be others. And then also, I think with this election right now, her position is really important. It's become important because of Joe's, you know, situation. And we'll get into this a little more into the interview, but I think that her impact has not been as great in terms of the African-American community as it was hoped to be.
I'd like for you to expound a little bit about that from the African-American community. When we think of vice presidents, specifically when we, and I'll talk about what you know of, the Obama presidency and his administration with Joe Biden being his vice president, we may have seen a little bit more of Joe Biden, but it's because he was in the Senate for a lot longer period of time, I think, you know, well, I know, than Kamala Harris. So what more would we expect from her being a vice president that we didn't get to see from Joe, or is that even a question that should be asked?
Well, I think just to go back a little bit before the Obama election, he was in the Senate and he had one office, and then they had to create another office to fill all the staff. It was so high level of popularity that, you know, he was a star, and Michelle Obama obviously was also seen as a star. I see a lot more organization that was going on those years. I mean, to go to both of those offices, you had a crowded situation. I mean, they probably could have had a third office, you know? So you got to think, for Kamala Harris, how much groundwork has she got? I feel she's made some great speeches, and I'm not saying that she's not a good vice president, but I'm just telling you that it hasn't had the blanket effect that Obama had.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. I think also her position being vice president as opposed to the president is one that should be definitely thought of. But I'm liking it also being, and I know we're talking about race and politics, but I also, you know, looking at the elephant in the room, she's a woman. And women have a slightly more disadvantage than men still when you look at the politics. I mean, we can see recently, even though he was, you know, skirting the idea of having a female vice president, the former president Trump just selected a male, a white male, as his running mate. So it clearly means that he does not feel like having a woman would be as valuable or advantageous for him. So I think that's part and parcel of why maybe we're not hearing as much from Kamala. People tend to put forth people when they have a following, a strong following.
How about hearing some more from or at least a first call from our listeners, Kimberly? Would you like me to give the number again?
Yes, please.
Absolutely, Kimberly. 518-622-2598. And I'd like to add, please press option 1. When you hear the menu, which is a voice recording of our very own Philip Grant from WGXC, who has a voice very similar to James Earl Jones, I might add. So 518-622-2598, please call in if you're listening. We've got a half hour left of this show, Race Talks, with your lovely host, Kimberly Y. Irwin.
And I pay him for that. Well, I said we're going to talk about something that's happening right now, and certainly in the media, this is a big deal. Though Trump is a white male, he is known to have definite opinions and voices them in rallies and on in stump speeches and things of that sort. Specifically, too, while he was running for president the first time and when he was president. And I recognize that many people on both sides of the aisle are stating important words of coming together, like a kumbaya kind of moment with dealing with this particular attempt that they were saying is an assassination attempt on his life just a few days ago. So, Omara, I know that you shared with me some of your thoughts about that privately. Can you share any of that publicly with the audience?
Sure. I mean, we really need to look at this assassination attempt more closely. I have a friend, Matt, who I spoke with yesterday, and he's a gun guy. You know, he knows guns. He knows the 50-odd. He told me all these things, and clearly he thought if there was a shot like that, that it could have been like the Kennedy situation. I mean, really. So having said that, we also had a situation where we had a lot of people in Butler, Pennsylvania. Why would they stand there and not run? I mean, if there's guns blazing and the Secret Service is shooting at this other guy who shot, then why is everybody just standing there? It just seemed odd. And the other thing that concerned me was, you know, Mike Collins of Georgia, the Republican, he posted on X on Saturday that President Biden, quote unquote, sent the orders to try and assassinate former President Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's just too much. So now, conveniently, the RNC convention is starting right after the incident. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence. It's serious. And information, as you know, travels and spreads like wildfire in North California, where there's all those wildfires. So you just look at these things, and J.D. Vance is the vice president's presidential pick. They announced him, and he's already come out and basically said, today is not some isolated incident. The central premise of the Biden campaign is that President Trump is an authoritarian fascist. I don't think Biden has said that. Who must be stopped at all costs? Their rhetoric led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. And we know that Biden was not involved, of course, in the Trump shooting or the court cases. So throughout the court cases, Trump has said, well, it's Biden who did this. He's the one. He's messing with these judges. I mean, why? How is that possible? You know?
Yeah, and I hear that you mentioned also the idea of fascism. And I think one of the ways people throw back things in your face is when you use words and terms against them with even a modicum of evidence. And they want to repudiate that. They throw that back at the person. So mentioning fascism and that, mentioning it in, you know, the same name with Joe Biden, it's crazy. It's like heresy. because when we have heard in the media talk about Trump, fascism, and his supporters with the Project 2025 blueprint, is very real and very much on the minds of many people who will be going to the voting booth to vote. And however, I've even received texts from business owners who, through their brand, feels like they want to come out and make a statement to show support of Trump as a person they would vote for. And also at the same time said that they actually have fear of doing so, as if the Democrats or some Democrat supporter or Biden supporter would, you know, want to harm someone who came out and claimed allegiance or loyalty or, you know, support for a Republican, in this case, a MAGA Republican, Trump. So I think when you look at rhetoric, you definitely hear the divide and conquer rhetoric that fascists use in the campaign speeches, and like you mentioned, his supporters and now his running mate, who it's their job to beat that drum that is very ignorant in itself, and very telling to everyone, it seems, except for their very loyal supporters. I actually read something on a social media site where you, a member of the assembly here in New York State, was very much sharing good, a good statement. In fact, you know, it's so good, I'm going to read it. And I will attribute it to our assembly member, Dee Dee Barrett. I say our assembly member, she's my assembly member, and of the 106th AD assembly district here in New York. She writes, or she said, "I condemn political violence of any kind, and I am horrified by the assassination attempt and senseless loss of life at former President Trump's rally in Pennsylvania over the weekend. At every level, we must tone down the aggressive language and divisive tone and think about our common values as a nation." That sounds positive to me. That sounds like everyone could get behind that and go forth. And yet, a Trump supporter was not very happy with that statement. Underneath that, they were talking about the media is the enemy of the people. They push lies that are designed to evoke an emotional response. Now, I ask you, Amara, and I'm going to ask you too, audience who are listening, and certainly you can call in and share this if you feel compelled to.
518-622-2593. 518-622-2598 and press option 3.
What would that mean for you as far as the media? Are we listening to the same media? I think that's the question then. I mean, because the media I'm listening to, I hear really negative, loud, boisterous, and I think the best I can say is less factual materials coming from the now Republican candidate for president of the United States. And I don't hear that same type of rhetoric coming from Joe Biden. And of course, he is president and he should behave in a presidential way. But we had a president just before him who didn't do that so much. So when you are hearing at these rallies, and the one that he was at when he was, when the blood started flowing from his ear, that the aggressive, hurtful language, and Trump is not new to that type of language. He put an ad in the media out during a really horrible happening when a white woman was raped and murdered in Central Park. And so this is a very telling event where you go out of your way to use media to say, not that you think these people should go to prison for the rest of their life, but they should be on death row. And this was in the, I mean, this cost money to put an ad in the New York Times. So that really shows that this is the heart of a person at that time. What's the heart of the person now? We can only go by the rhetoric that that person uses. And so I'm throwing it to you, Wamara, and again, people who want to call in. How do you bring a Frederick Douglass-like response to what we are witnessing, that people don't seem to even be consuming the same media?
Well, I would say one of the things that stood out to me was that there were four African-Americans on death row who were executed in 2020, and they were doing appeals. I mean, they were trying to, you know, essentially go through the process. But then it was lights out. They're gone. It happened really fast. And that's very suggestive to me that they were targeted. Okay? So with this recent shooting stuff, think about it. He wants the sympathy. of even the politician you mentioned, obviously for the White House as well. Oh, this is horrible. But it's very suspicious what happened. Why? And the timing, it's very suspicious. That kid, the shooter, his parents were both licensed counselors. So what happened? You know, why would this kid go and do this unless there was money involved? You know, and, you know, it's just a sacrifice. It's simple in a sense that a sacrifice could happen. And who cares about one 20-year-old kid? You know, whatever happens to him doesn't really matter. What matters is to control the political discussion of what's happening. You know, and that's what, in some ways it worked. Now, long term, I'm not sure. I can't say for sure what's going to happen in the months to come. But I think that we're looking at a situation was a stunt. I mean, honestly, and, you know, these other African Americans who are out here, who happen to be on death row, they got to be concerned if Trump gets elected. They could be the next to go, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad you did state your opinion, because I'm going to be a devil's advocate now, Amara. And people are thinking, and some people are thinking, what are you talking about? This is a conspiracy theory. And, you know, regardless of where that conspiracy theory lies, it's one that does not, it breeds contempt and does not bring people together.
Well, I think it's important to be transparent in the research I've done and the years of covering news in different shootings and different situations. Something just doesn't feel right about this incident in Butler, Pennsylvania. So I'm not like Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, who believes in aliens and things like that. No, I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. But I'm just saying we have to think about both sides of the situation. And to suggest that Biden was involved in it is very telling. You know, there wasn't a hesitation for this Republican Collins to come out and say he made those orders to shoot President Trump. So that's a problem, you know. And Biden has his own troubles, you know. I met him several times, starting with the Obama presidency. His staff, especially former Biden press secretary Amy Dudley, was amazing, irreplaceable. The bulk of all this staff left after Obama's second term. And the replacements are younger group who don't know Joe as well. George Clooney published a piece in the New York Times that suggested that Biden should step down. I think that, you know, obviously that wasn't good news for Biden. But also, you think about the death of his son, Beau Biden, in 2015. And I was in D.C. when this happened. I think they had kept it very hush-hush. And then when he died, everybody knew.
Well, you mentioned when he died, everyone knew. Yes, we got a
everybody
phone
knew.
Call, so we're trying to do two things
oh,
in the
see.
Studio
okay.
at one
so,
time.
So,
but just can you repeat
so
what you just
Biden,
last said?
Sure, sure. In 2015, Joe Biden's son, Beau, passed away in a veterans hospital. And, you know, I think it crushed Joe. It really hurt him personally. And now, of course, Hunter is been convicted, and I think that's very public. It's very embarrassing and stressful for Joe Biden, and he's already 81 years old. So the Joe that I saw during the Obama years, his life was a lot easier. He didn't have to go out and do as many things. He would go to Delaware on the weekends, things like that. And there was such a flow to his life. But now to be thrust into this position as president to do all these things is a lot. So they've talked about replacing Joe with Governor California Governor Gavin Newsom, who, you know, has been repeatedly mentioned, but I'm not sure.
Okay, caller.
Yeah, it's got to be soon.
Yes?
I'm so sorry, too. We have two calls coming in at the same time. So can you just share what your name is, caller, and make sure we are not using any profanity? But I definitely want to hear what you have to say, and thank you for calling.
Yes, my name is Rob Gellis. I live in Hudson. I know about your program. This is the first time I've called in.
Well, welcome, Robert.
I'm not sure what your topic is tonight.
Okay. Well, our topic is race in the media, or race in politics via the media. And what we were asking is for the listeners to call in and share what they would like to regarding our conversation, anything that we mentioned today. And were you able to listen in on any part of the conversation?
Okay, well, I don't know. I just, right now, I was just watching something, some interesting program on YouTube about photography and how they, George Eastman changed the way people took photographs. It would, to have a film, you could use film and a camera. Before that, people had these big boxes, and they'd use plates and chemicals to take pictures. And I thought that was interesting just share that.
Thank you.
What we take for granted. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that really works well with what you were just saying, Wamara, where, you know, this assassination attempt could be staged. And if you are a person who is great with photography, great with filming, great with setting things up, and people would say Trump values his time as on his produced series, and that he runs many of his his press conferences that become quite theatrical in how he likes to run things. It's no secret about that. So I can see how one can go from possible conspiracy theory to utilizing the knowledge that he has and the desire that he has to be larger than life, in a sense. Whether he would take it to this extreme level, we don't know, but we are familiar with January 6th. And that is a time when many people lost their lives. One would be too many, and were injured, could not work. And in fact, so many people came out in support of the people who were hurt, and even on both parties at one point where it seemed like a done deal that those people who were rioting and otherwise destroying property of our government would be held accountable. And then we have this particular president who seemingly flip-flopped. And, you know, depending on who he wants the supporters to be, he makes a statement to have them be in support of him. So I want to thank you again, Robert, for calling in and sharing your understanding and knowledge about photography. And I'm not sure if that was in the vein in which you called, but it certainly worked to bring that awareness that we can, of course, manipulate what we see. It's like someone says, don't believe your lying eyes.
So. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, if you think of it, people see things instantly today. If you go way back, you wouldn't see things instantly. There was no TV. You hear about it. If an event like January 6th happened, you wouldn't know until the papers came out, and maybe somebody would take a picture and it would come in the newspaper. But people that had no way of really seeing things like those events, it was so much different back then.
Yes. Did we And I want to thank you, and we're going to try to get another caller in before the end.
Sure.
Hello, caller. You are on air. Please state your name.
Kimberly, this is John Parker, who was on your program last month.
Hello, John. Johannes. Of course.
Yeah, I just wanted to I wanted to thank you. It was such a pleasure to be with you last week, listen to all of your guests, and I wish you all the best, and I can't wait for next month.
And did you want to say anything or ask a question to our guest speaker today, Wamara Mwine, who has taken over your role?
I did want to say that today I listened to a interview with somebody from India. The person was saying that they were a little bit upset that Kamala Harris is never portrayed as being Indian or being bicultural in Indian culture. I thought that was very interesting. Rarely does you hear that. Just wanted to share that with you, and if you had any feelings or your any comments about that?
Well, I particularly think we need to recognize every part of who we are in our existence. That's why there's one race, the human race, and many ethnic identities. And she has probably even more than just those two ethnic identities, but those are probably the ones that most people are aware of, and she clearly acknowledges them. I acknowledge them both, that she was African-American and of Asian descent. So many people don't think of the Indian from India as being of Asian descent, but that's what we utilize in our language in America to give the terminology of those from the nation of India as being of Asian heritage. So, and I think, you know, it's incumbent on everyone to ask people how they would like to identify. You know, we do that somewhat now when we put our pronouns up. You know, sometimes I'm asked, I just have it on my email, her, she, hers, or something like that. So, I don't see that there's a negation of any ethnic group if someone does not lead with their ethnic identity, because, again, there are people who are still asking the question, why even talk about race and ethnicity? And so, but I hope that my answer shares with you that it doesn't matter how you feel, really. It matters how the person is taken the conversation. So the fact that this person was able to share that with you, I think that's a positive, and I applaud you for bringing it up here. And I'm so glad I mentioned both of her ethnic identities that I'm aware of. And I would say, do you know all of mine? I don't know. All right. So thank you again for being on my show, for calling in and sharing your thoughts and the thoughts of others that you've heard about. I appreciate it. And I think that's, again, what Race Talks is all about, is us sharing our understanding and thoughts and presumptions about race and ethnicity so that we can learn and grow. And maybe one day our children's children's children would be like, race what? But until then, I'm Kimberly Wyoren, your host on Race Talks.
Thank you so much, Kimberly. You're a blessing.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now. Have a cool day. All right, so we are nearing our time to go. We didn't get that ding. Oh, there it is. But I definitely want to thank those callers. Wamara, I would love for you to share your last words on that came up with maybe even one of the callers, though they didn't ask you the question directly. How would you have answered it, or anything else you might want to share with the listeners before we have to say goodbye?
Okay, Kim. It's been great, and I'm glad we could cover some of this material that's very sensitive, obviously. I mean, the first thought that comes to my mind is about colorism. The New York Times did a piece about this. And, you know, when I look at you and you look at me, we know where we're from. I mean, to a big degree, maybe you're looking at me and saying, oh, yeah, he's definitely African. But also, I see you, right? So someone like Kamala Harris has a mix of different races. So maybe that makes it hard for the community to see her as a pure African-American, you know, woman.
Mm.
So I think that's one point. And that's not to take away from her other, you know, nationalities. But I also think that we're in a situation where people get, you know, thinking about the big names, Oprah, P. Diddy, and so forth, they get to a certain level and they're no longer connected to the community. You know, it's sad, but it's a reality. And oftentimes, even on the corporate level, you have folks who get into these leadership roles and are making a lot of money, and the unwritten rule is that you're not going to go back to that community. So that's an important dynamic that we've been missing, I think, that happens. So if you're making $300,000 and you're at some corporation and you decide, oh, I'm going to go back to my community and help those people, then those bosses could say, well, you might not want to do that if you want to keep your job. So it's important to support your communities and your upbringing. We were fortunate in our family. We had both my parents were, you know, multiple degrees. So, and they were both professors, you know, at different times. So the expectation for us was not just to go to college. We went to private school, and then went to prep school, and then we went to college, you know. So how many people have that opportunity? And the last thing I'll say is that I know this woman, Tanya, who works at this hotel. One of the pictures I've been selling was to that hotel. And I think that she would never know who you exist. I mean, how you would exist in her mind. It's so many issues, so many problems, scattered issues. As an African-American woman who's 47 with grandkids, and it's just impossible for her to even imagine you. It's not possible. Your education, your upbringing, all those things are completely devoid of her experience. How would she know?
Well, I have to let that be the last question. How will she know? And I want to thank you, Wamara Mwine, for being a special guest today as we had a conversation that really reflects on what's happening today in America. Right now, as we speak, they're having a convention in the Republican Party. And so I know people are going to be tuned into that. I say to people, know who you are and know others. It's good to be knowledgeable about everything. And obviously, vote. Voting is important. You heard Frederick Douglass's words. He was not able to vote, but he was able to stand there in front of the people who were elected and mean something. And today, his words mean something of value to me. So I want to thank my audience for listening. I want to thank my production. Ding, ding. And everyone, please join us next week for
thank you.
the race talks and later the Race Talk Show. I'm your host, Kimberly Irwin, for on WGXC 90.7 FM, signing off. Love, beauty, joy, y'all. And now we have an interlude moment. Uh-huh. So what we had here was a moment for another Frederick Douglass statement. Wamara, you have that on your letter there. Would you like to read that? Frederick Douglass's part.
Is it, or the one that I sent you?
That one.
He's got one there. Oh, okay.
We have 30 seconds.
Do you want me to? Okay, hold on.
Oh, I got it. I think we're going to run out of time.
All right, here we go. Oh, sorry.
Oh, well, one day.
It's right.
Next time. Next right. time. Sign in.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just glad that we got as much as we covered. At least we got in